Welcome back, Raw Thoughts, to another episode with me, Mackenzie Tiggs. Today, I have Summer Gilbert Watson on with us. We're really talking about being the spouse of a first responder, what that looks like, what her career has been, 5 miscarriages. So, Summer, thank you so much for coming on and being vulnerable and sharing the story with us today.
No problem. Again, she introduced me, Summer Gilbert Watson. I was married to a first responder, a firefighter, paramedic, now an engineer. But I'm changing my name back to my maiden name, Watson. And I also play music, and it's under Watson. And so those of you who have been divorced know how hard it is to change all that. So I'm taking my time. And so I have to get a social security card, driver's license, all of that stuff. So, but I'll be back to Summer Watson soon enough.
Perfect. Perfect. So tell us who Summer Watson is.
Okay. All right. Who am I? So I was born, in California, Southern California. From what I can remember, we moved to Dana Point when I was 3 years old. And then I have 2 older brothers. One's 4 years older than me. That's Josh. And then I have my oldest brother, Jake. He's 5 years older than me. And I'm the baby and the only girl. So they were my protectors, but they've always been like my best friends. They never picked on me. They were just, I don't know, they picked on each other. But with me, it was always protection. Like a guy would call from school, I'd be in fourth grade, like, hey, is Summer home? Because we had a class project. Oh, she doesn't live here. And then I'd go to school the next day. And then they'd be like, you gave me the wrong number. I'm like, no, that was my number. And so I'd have to like tell my parents, like, hey, you got to tell them to knock it off.
Oh,
like,
my gosh.
They wouldn't let anyone near me.
That
so
funny.
As I got older, dating was difficult with brothers. So any younger sisters probably understand that. Let's see.
Tell us a little bit. I'm going to jump forward.
Okay.
Tell us a little bit about your parents, growing up, and them being kind of in that first responder realm as well.
Okay.
What was that like growing up in that kind of culture?
So my dad was a firefighter, paramedic, and then turned captain. He did his full, 30 years, I think they work. He did his full deployment as a fireman. And then he moved to Hawaii after. And he told us his whole life, hey, when I retire, I'm moving to Hawaii. My mom was an emergency room nurse, charge nurse in San Clemente, and did that until she passed away. And I'll get to that. So when my dad retired, he moved to Hawaii. My parents divorced when I was about 8 years old. My mom was very young when she had us. She was in her, I think she was 19 when she had my oldest brother, and then 26 when she had me, and 25, 26, something like that. And so when she got to her 30s, I think she felt like she missed out on the party phase and, you know, the dating and all of that. And her job was really hard on her, obviously. Mm-hmm. She started drinking and she got into a horrible relationship. So I grew up seeing a lot of abuse towards her, never towards me. Her boyfriend's never touched me, but I've seen her getting thrown downstairs and that kind of thing. My dad was a different situation. He was a really strong Christian. He was very musical. And so every time he came home from the fire station, we had a rule. We'd give him like an hour. So he'd either go surf or he'd go play music or he'd go do something to unwind. And that was his way of kind of coping with the stress of his job. And so he had a really healthy way of dealing with being up all night.
Yeah.
You know, and you being a paramedic, you know how that is.
Yep.
So 2 different cultures. going, I had a week with my mom and a week with my dad. And so it was always like, I loved going with my mom because my mom was so fun and funny and just like kind of let us do anything, you know, and my dad was more rigid and, you know, strict, but it was a more healthy situation for us growing up.
Yeah.
You know, I think my dad did it right. He, you know, I think being religious and having outlets, healthy outlets, was really what got him through his career.
Absolutely.
And my mom, you know, she believed in God, but she wasn't going to church. She didn't have those outlets. So she cooked. She was an amazing cook, but that she would come home and she would open a bottle of wine, you know, or, you know, pour a drink and unwind that way. Mm-hmm. And it caught up to her, and she was only 52 when she passed away of liver failure. Wow. And never talked to us about her calls or you know, her the things that
she saw.
And I actually even volunteered, because when I was young, I volunteered at her hospital for a while and saw her work, and she was just amazing at her job. I mean, that's why she was charge nurse.
Right.
She was a functional alcoholic. And so no one knew, you know, so it was a big surprise when all of a sudden she started getting sicker and sicker and sicker. And, you know, my dad finally was like, I don't want you to be around that, and got full custody. And which was hard for him being a firefighter,
right?
Because he had to pay extra to hire someone to come watch me. My brothers were a little bit older. And so, you know, I don't know the biggest difference with, you know, firefighting and being, you know, an ER doctor or an ER nurse. The stress is immense.
Right.
And I saw it both ways. And I saw someone handle it in a healthy way, and I saw someone handle it in a non-healthy way. And to me, that kind of gave me perspective. And in my 20s, I met my ex-husband, and he told me, oh, I just finished the fire academy. I was like, oh my God, you're gonna be a fireman. And it's funny because my oldest brother followed in my brother's footsteps. He's a firefighter, paramedic, engineer now. And then my middle brother, Josh, he is a famous tattoo artist. You can see him at Joshua Watson Art. I would definitely look him up. He is amazing. But he's located in California with the rest of my family. So I'm the only one here in Boise now. I was with my ex-husband through paramedic school, which was gnarly.
Yes, I do know
late
that.
Late nights and tons of studying and he almost quit a million times. And I had to talk him on the phone, like, do not walk out of there. You have to stay there. That's how you're going to get hired in California. You have to be a firefighter paramedic, you know? And he's like, I know that. And he got through it and he got hired. And he's all tattooed up. And in California, they have a big strict policy about that. So he had to wear sleeves. Like, my dad's like, oh, he's never going to get hired. And I think that gave my ex more drive to, you know,
prove him wrong.
So he did everything he could to get hired, and he did. And so we were together for a long time. So we met, I was on a music tour, and, he was at one show and then another show and another show. And by the end of the tour, we were like official, never broke up, got married. We were together, I think all 12 years all together. And, that's including before marriage. We got a dog together. Our dog is 9 now, and through the divorce, I got to keep the dog because he can't because of his career.
Yeah.
So I know that's a tough one on him, but for me, it was a lifesaver because my dog is my world and he loves Boise.
Good.
He is so happy here.
Good.
Oh my gosh.
So I want to ask you had this these parents a healthy, you know, relationship with their career and a unhealthy relationship with their career. Mm-hmm. Then you have a brother, and then now you have, at the time, a husband. Mm-hmm. How did your husband at the time come home from shift? You grew up in that, mm-hmm. right? You saw what that looked like.
Yep.
How did that bring you back with now your husband doing the same career that your parents were in, and especially your dad was in, and then now coming home from shift?
Yeah. So I expected him to act like my father because he was a very responsible guy. That's one of the reasons I married him. He's super smart, athletic, healthy, financially stable, you know, checks all the boxes. And as, you know, things went on, you know, he'd go on a pediatric call. He'd come home and he wouldn't want to talk to me, you know? And I was like, okay, I remember my dad saying, okay, give me an hour, you know? So I would give him some time. Well, an hour would turn into 2 days of him, you know, not recovering. And I would ask him what he wants at dinner. Oh, I got it myself. I got dinner myself. I'm like, okay, that's fine. And then he would get forced, and then he would get overtime, and then he would do traits. And he grew up with not a big family, so money was really important to him. And so he just worked his ass off and stashed cash, and family was second. And that's kind of how, through our marriage, how I saw it. Mm-hmm. And there was times where he wouldn't get any sleep, and I was nervous for him to come home because I didn't know how he was going to treat me or talk to me. Or he didn't have a big group of friends. He did have surfing. That was one of his outlets, and running. But that just didn't seem to do the trick. I feel like I was kind of his punching bag. And it got to the point where, you know, years down the line, where I went to therapy on my own and ended up getting, my doctor was like, you need to be on Xanax. Like, you are like on edge with your husband. Like, you don't know, you know, what mood he's going to be in. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes over the stupidest things, he'd be, you know, wouldn't talk to me for a week.
Wow.
And littlest things. And that almost turned me into a liar because I didn't want to tell him. I mean, it did turn me into a liar because I didn't want to tell him things I spent money on, or, and I worked full time and I was corporate, and he just was so controlled with money and just wanted to save and save and save and save. That, the littlest things, like you spent $150 on Starbucks this week. You did, you know, and it was just like, I was married to my father, like a father figure, right, than a husband, you know? And, I know in his mind, he was doing the right thing. But when you look at the big scheme of things, and when I was talking to therapists and family, they were like, this is not healthy.
Right.
You know, and there's a healthier way to deal with the stress. And he was working way too much.
Yeah.
And he was at a very, very busy department and was forced constantly, sent out on strike teams for 30 days. And then, you know, so it was always me and my dog at the house, and then come home. Yeah. And then he'd have to recover from that. And I really just became his punching bag. And, you know, for any of you first responders out there that are married, we tried to have children, and I honestly believe that God blessed us with our miscarriages. We had 5. Wow. Because I don't think he could have handled that. Yeah. Coming home to 5 kids. I mean, just coming home to me and my dog was enough stress for him, mm-hmm. you know? And he didn't have the proper parenting, and I don't think they teach that when you guys go to school.
They don't
teach you guys stress management.
No.
And how to handle it.
No.
You know?
It's, I want to talk about this really quick because this is one of my, and probably will get me emotional because it affects every single one of these first responders. And they just come to think that it's like, I'm invisible or I'm invincible or this isn't going to affect me. And we're in this savior, hero, like, look at how wonderful, egotistical these realms are. And don't get me wrong, like they're amazing careers. Like they really are. Like the most selfless people you will find are these first responders. Absolutely. They literally will go to work to put their life on the line for a stranger. But yet we don't have the training. We don't have the resources. Nobody is talking. Nobody is talking. And I say nobody because I went through these careers, right? I was a wildland firefighter. I was a paramedic. I went through EMT. Like I've worked in these, my parents, and there is not one class that when we went through that they teach you how to manage what you see, what you deal with, how to talk to your spouse. And this is one of my biggest strives right now is to hear stories like you and bring people on and talk about these things because it is something that is affecting every single one of our first responders. Yeah. It may not be your first year. It may not be your 10th year, but it could be your 40th year and you've already retired.
Yeah.
And it's still affecting every single person. And, you know, with this podcast and you coming on and sharing your perspective of the spouse, like I could not be more happy and thrilled by this because it's a different perspective that we're seeing. It, mm-hmm. It's the perspective of the first responder comes home from work and the family is the first punching bag.
Yeah.
They don't want to talk to you. They don't want to, you know, explain to you what happened on shift. They, you know, are in these moods. The biggest thing is that they're dysregulated, you know, and then you come into your husband, your ex-husband didn't have a family support. No. He's trying to, you know, work his ass off for the money. Well, the money is not in, you know,
yeah.
first responders. So now we're working double shifts. Now we're away from home even mm-hmm. more. And then they just expect you to be like so excited and so happy yeah. and that they nothing has changed them.
But then there's the wife that expects like him to come home and dote over his wife, mm-hmm. you know? And like, so, you know, and like, I'm so excited to see you. But then you can't expect that.
Yeah.
If you marry someone like that.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what they went through.
Yeah.
And they might not want to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And you can't force it out of them. Mm-hmm. You know? And I feel like if there was that kind of training, I might not be divorced today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like I said, I mean, these are one of the biggest things, especially with not only this podcast, but Mindbase, you know, getting these resources out to these first responders because you have the stigma and you have the lack of resources. And, you know, like you said, you may have not been in this situation getting divorced if he got the proper tools and the proper training and being able to explain to these, I'm going to say men, because most of them are men within mm-hmm. these realms that we have to start talking about these things. It isn't that anything is wrong with you. It is the things that we see, the traumatic experiences, and it may not even be the most critical call or the worst call, but it's the sleepless nights. It's the lack of pay. It's the lack of support. It's the, you know, admin telling you, like demanding you that you're going to work. And if you want the pay, then you're going to have to work mm-hmm. and just all of these things stacking up. And then we talk about you being the wife at home and now have gone through miscarriages.
Yeah. And then he expects me to get over it, you know, quick, because what he goes through was worse than that, mm-hmm. right? And then there's hormones involved. And so then there's fighting and then there, you know, and I don't think, I mean, he was just like, okay, get over it. We'll go on to the next or, you know, and I don't think he understood the effect that it had on me. Mm-hmm. Right. And then he was gone most of the time. Like I think only one of my surgeries, my DNCs, he was with me. The rest,
wow.
I had a family member or a friend. I even Ubered
to one.
Because he had to work. And then so I'm dealing with that, right? But then I'm trying not to be selfish and get the support for him because I know he needs support himself. And I could see the job just pulling him down. Mm-hmm. Like there was one incident that I know it was a pediatric drowning that he tried and tried and tried and, you know, mm-hmm. he lost the child and years later he still couldn't get over it. Right. But then we lose a child. Right. And it's like, okay, let's move on. Let's go. Mm-hmm. And I know it's a pregnancy. It's different. But to me, I'm like, we just lost a baby. We just lost another baby, mm-hmm. you know? And, you know, so I would look at it like in so many, try to put myself in his shoes. And then I'd go back to my selfish, like, I want the support, you know? But then I'm like, but he needs the support. Like, mm-hmm. how do we do this? How do we balance this? Mm-hmm. You know? And there's just no... And going back to my mom, I don't know in that world, in the nursing world, in, you know, especially emergency room, do they have that training?
Right.
Because maybe she'd be alive today.
Yeah. Yeah. How long before, you know, you got pregnant, and then like how long within those pregnancies did this all happen? And then the time frames between all of these five miscarriages?
I would say our first pregnancy was 2018. And then that's when we started. And then because we kind of told ourselves that we were going to start when I was 35, and I'm 39 now. So I don't know, do the math. That's when my first pregnancy was. And then, it was always like my like fourth or fifth check, like when I was ready to find out if it was a boy or a girl is when could not find a heartbeat. So I always had a missed miscarriage. Which sucked because I'd have to have surgery and, you know, get it out. The very first one was the worst one because they didn't put you under. I could like feel them go in there, and that's the one actually my husband was at and holding my hand. And he was like, "Are you sure you can't give her anything?" That was with Kaiser, and that was like the worst experience. And then once we got a PPO, I was put under every time. They didn't want you to feel it, and you know, it's more than the pain, it's the emotion and psychological part of miscarriage that's, you know, and the fact that he didn't want me to talk about it with anyone and that he would get upset when I would tell my family was really confusing to me. But it felt so good to talk about it. And that's what inspired me to start a podcast called Surviving Miscarriage, and for women or men mm-hmm. to come on and talk about their experience through whether it was a stillbirth to maybe an 8-week mm-hmm. miscarriage. I just had my last one was a stillbirth. She got to hold the baby in her arms, you know, mm-hmm. But the emails I get afterwards of them like, oh my God, it felt so good to share my story and then give advice to other women yeah. on what I did to get through it.
Absolutely.
Because it's different for everyone. And so someone's advice might resonate with someone else's advice. Yeah. And I didn't know many people that have had miscarriages, and I needed that advice. And that's kind of what inspired kind of gearing to that surviving miscarriage. Yeah. And
you're gaining the support, you know, yeah. like you said, he kind of shamed you for being able to talk with your family or talk about what's happening. And that's the struggle that he's also having at work, is that it's like, oh, we don't talk about these things. We don't talk about the struggles. We don't talk about, you know, we don't talk about these things, but yet we're seeing the route that it's headed. And, you know, I want to give you huge kudos because you are one of my listeners. And, you know, what you said is they reach out to you afterwards and they're like, wow, I didn't realize how therapeutic that was to really share, like, this is happening to me. Like, people around me actually need to know the struggles instead of just always continuing to share that life is so fucking perfect. Like, it's not. No one's life is perfect. Mm-mm. And when we get to be able to share these imperfections, that's when we get to help other people.
Yeah.
That's when we get to share. We're not sharing these stories to be pity me or sorry me. No, we're sharing these stories like yours because you're actually getting to help somebody that's maybe going through this, or somebody hears this and they relate it to somebody else that they know and they send it to them. And that is where you find that support. You find support within vulnerability. Yeah.
And that's what you're doing with your first responder stuff. And there was one episode, I can't remember his name. I just remember he was wearing a hat and he was talking about how he almost committed suicide. And I was bawling because there were times where my husband would come home so depressed. And I was just like literally he was bawling, crying. Like, and I didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. I couldn't help him. I didn't know, like, I don't want to like call him out or like tell his coworkers, or I didn't know what the right thing to do was. Just be there for him and just tell him I love him and be there, you know? Mm-hmm. And I related with him so much in just the fact that I've seen someone struggle like that. I've seen two people struggle like in two different careers that are, you know, kind of similar.
Right.
But the difference would between firemen, I mean, I know there's a lot of ER nurses and doctors that or doesn't matter what department you're in, that work night shifts that, right, you know, which is so bad for your heart. But I mean, firefighters are up in the tone of the bell, right? Or paramedics as well, the tone of the bell. And that is so bad for your heart. So bad for your heart. And I started doing like research on that because I was like, is that what's causing his depression? Like, is that what causing this? Is like he has to get up and then he becomes engineer. So he has to get up and then he has to be wide awake. Mm-hmm. Like some of these other guys are just like in the back, barely kind of waking up as they're driving to the call, right? Mm-hmm. These engineers have to get up and they need to be up and drive this 1,000-pound rig through the city, you know? And I mean, that's...
And be safe and know where you're going and be able to, you know, do lights and sirens. And that's getting your heart, you know, you now have just like woken from a dead sleep to now your heart is in a, you know, a sympathetic mode, fight or flight. Now we're driving this truck, like you said, through the community. And these are all the things that it's like, well, no fucking shit, we have stress. Yeah. You know, all of these things, whether it's your parents, you know, whether it was your dad being a firefighter or your mom being a nurse, all of these things start coming down to stress.
Yeah.
You know, stress on the body, stress on the mind, stress spiritually. You know, you talked about your dad being that spiritual person, believing in a higher power. And, you know, for the listeners, like, spirituality does not mean you have to believe in a God. Like it spirituality really means that you believe that there is something or someone or a higher power than you, you know, like whatever you want to give that power to and that time and that energy, there is something higher than you. And so with all of this, you talk about not knowing what to do. So what did you do? I mean, besides just being there for support, like what was your breaking point to be like, I'm going through my own struggles?
I think the emotional abuse got too much and I started relying on my medication way too much and that became unhealthy. And I just realized I was in a very unhealthy state and that's not, we weren't the couple we used to be. And I take a lot of credit for it too, because I felt I wasn't getting the support I needed. I don't think he felt like he was getting the support he needed. And, you know, amicably, we decided together that this wasn't going to work. Now it's kind of changed over money, which is so stupid. So stupid, you know, like why, yes, we're divorced, but we can be amicable with each other. We spent, you know, a decade of our lives together. We could be amicable. And that's one thing I don't understand, but that's something for him to work out and in his deal. But, you know, one thing I wanted to bring up too, is that my dad just turned 70, and even though he had healthy ways of dealing with the stress, I mean, it's going to make me cry. I'm still afraid his career is going to catch up with him. Mm-hmm. The smoke inhalation, the waking up, you know, like his life expectancy might not be as long as others because of the career he chose.
Yeah. And I, for my biggest supporter out there, my dad, like it is something that you think about, because, you know, I've asked him so many times of like, how did you have a very successful career, you know? Mm-hmm. And we talk about it, and I try to get those things out of him. And sometimes he doesn't know. He's like, you know, he was a tinker and he came home from work, and I don't ever remember those things. And it's going to get really raw, because, you know, my mom being a dispatcher too, and I can understand those things where you see the parent that like got through the career, and you see the parent that really hasn't.
Yeah.
And like, maybe this is a big shout out to my mom, but like, that is why like I try to do what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Because I've seen it. I'm the daughter of those two first responders too, mm-hmm. you know, and being able to be in the career and be able to understand and see these patterns. You know, I think that's why it really, like, it seems silly, because the listeners are like, well, no shit. Like, first yeah. responders are your people, you know? Like, no shit. Those are how you grew up and what you have been around. But it's really sitting back and like mm-hmm. you helping me understand that is like, you see it from a different aspect. You see it from a different perspective. And it's not saying that like we're invincible to it. It's
yeah.
just saying like, you can see healthy versus unhealthy. You can see, you know, really good versus bad.
Yeah.
And being in those and, you know, getting to a point where, you know, I can understand where it's like, well, what do you say to them?
Yeah.
How do you say that to them? You know? Yeah.
And when I hear people, oh, it just pisses me off when they're like, oh yeah, firefighters just sit back and watch TV all day and get, especially in California, get paid so much money. You know, I'm like, excuse me.
Yeah.
You know, I saw my dad 50% of my life growing up, mm-hmm. you know, like that is not the case. Mm-hmm. That is absolutely not the case. And I'm looking into the camera. That is not the case. Like half of you people could not do what they do.
Mm-hmm. Oh, more than half. I mean, I know so many people just, you know, they're like, oh my gosh, like I could never, you know, I hear more times than not that people wouldn't be able to do these yeah. jobs. And we're seeing that within first yeah. responders. We're not having the people go to EMT school to then be able to get into paramedic school. We're not seeing, you know, the firefighters. We're seeing more people retire mm-hmm. and get out of the career than we are seeing get into the career.
Yeah.
You know, we have communities coming in and, you know, defund the police and all of this stuff against them. But yet they want them when you call 911.
Oh, exactly. Oh, that pisses me off.
And it's like, you know, what you said too is a lot of first responders do get into this career because they think like, oh, it'll be the perfect schedule. I'll work 2 days and I'll have 5 days off, or I'll have 4 days off and I'll have four yeah. days off with my family. That's not the case.
No.
You're working, you know, more times than not, you're working at least another job, if not two, mm-hmm. if not three.
Especially here.
Especially in Idaho.
Or other states.
I mean, I had one of my, you know, he was one of my EMTs at the time, and he's gone to, you know, paramedic, and he worked 109 hours in a week.
Jesus Christ.
And that's to be able to put food on the table for his child. And his wife is a nurse as well. Mm-hmm. And it's like, people have this perspective that, oh my gosh, that is the most amazing schedule that you'll ever have. And it's like, you prepare before you go on to your 48, and then you work those 2 days, and then you need time to recover. And that's me being a single person, mm-hmm. you know, not let alone coming home to a spouse or trying to have a family or, you know, all of the other external things that happen in life.
Yeah. Funny story. One of the first dates I actually went on, I've only been here a month, but he was like, oh, I'm a firefighter. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Are you kidding me? But we got into just talking about, it ended up, we talked about pay a little bit, and he told me how much he got paid. And I was like, I got paid almost twice as that. And I wasn't in that career. Mm-hmm. And I just was like, holy shit. Mm-hmm. Holy shit. And I think that's why people give California firefighters a hard time. But most of our cities, a lot of our cities, especially Orange County, I mean, are condensed. And I mean, all you hear is just engines and fire, you know, all day long, all night. And so, you know, I remember when we moved in, we were the youngest ones on our block, and our neighbors were giving my husband crap and saying like, oh yeah, what'd you do on your shift yesterday? Just sit on, you know, what'd you guys watch? What movies did you watch and whatever? And I look at his face, and I can just see just almost like the anger in his eyes. 'Cause he's like, they have no idea. One guy's an accountant. He gets to come home to his wife every single night. Right. You know? And, you know, and 2 hours later, my husband gets a phone call and he's forced, right? And he's got to go. And he's gone for 72 hours. And then he's gone on a strike team because we got our California fire, you know, wildfire. Mm-hmm. So they're wildland trained. So they have to go to support that. Swift water rescue, they're paramedics, they're firemen. I mean, California, they do all of it. And so I don't even think they get paid enough in California for as much as they make them do. Mm-hmm. But it's going back to my oldest brother. I think one benefit of my dad being a firefighter is that he has someone to talk to, mm-hmm. because my oldest brother has 3 kids. And his wife is a stay-at-home mom. And luckily, so you know, manages the kids and stuff. And, she's really good with him. She knows how to deal or just give him a space, mm-hmm. you know, and manage the kids when he gets home, you know, and when my brother has struggles, he goes to my dad, and my dad went through it, obviously. Mm-hmm. And, he has my dad to go through. And I would always ask my husband, like, talk to my dad. And it's like, he had too much pride to talk to him. Mm-hmm. And my dad was so open about like, hey, I'm here. Like, and my dad is sometimes a hard guy to talk to, you know, he's very opinionated, but he's right a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And like, he really is. And even if he's not, just let that go over your shoulder and listen, because maybe 10% of that is going to resonate. And, so, you know, I'm thankful for that, because my oldest brother's a firefighter, and he has my dad to go to, and you know, and I worry about him. He's been injured on the job a ton. He just got he's an engineer, and one of the homes that they were at, I think it was a home, blew up, and he had his tank on his back. And he got blown back onto his back. And so he was out on leave. He's injured his knee on the job. He's has a lot of injuries because of his job.
Absolutely. Do you feel like you're able to connect with his wife because you were also the wife
of Absolutely. Absolutely. And we talk about it a lot. Yeah. Like, you know, and sometimes he does. She is his punching bag, mm-hmm. you know, and I'll talk to my brother about it. And, my sister-in-law, Christy, and I do have a lot of in common because of that. And, she does come to me with that. And, but my brother is a amazing father. And I think he does his career for his family and his kids. Mm-hmm. And, he stopped working as much so he can be with his kids, mm-hmm. you know, and his injuries have, you know, helped him be home more. And I think his injuries almost helped because he still got paid, but he saw what he was missing at home mm-hmm. and all the, you know, baseball games and yeah. ballet and all of that, that he got to go to during injury. And, I think that's kind of give him a different perspective about family. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, growing up with a dad like my dad and being able to, have someone to talk to that's mm-hmm. been in the career, that's your father, like the closest person to you. I mean, my dad and my brother are like best friends. Sometimes we like laugh because family dinners, it's all fire talk. We're like, you guys, come on, let's talk about something else.
Yeah.
It's just fire talk between them. But, I think you're absolutely right. That's one thing that, and I hope that your podcasts get to someone in the training, because that is one thing that, they need mm-hmm. is the support.
Right.
Because I mean, I was bawling my eyes out listening to a couple of your episodes of one was a police officer, one was a fireman who, you know, tried to commit suicide mm-hmm. and, you know, being married to someone, being to a first responder and yeah. seeing how hard that is on your mind, your body, all of that. It's gnarly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to, you know, touch on something because I definitely resonate with that with my ex, you know, and I saw he wasn't, you know, and even at the time I wasn't getting the, you know, I would say the proper help to really get regulated after a shift. That's really what it comes down to, the simplicity of our nervous system, our brain, our neurons is like they get so dysregulated. And then, you know, your brain literally changes shape with trauma.
Yeah.
And the re-exposure, and even if we don't actually go to these calls, but maybe you get dispatched to or you hear, you know, it's all of your senses that get heightened. And, you know, I saw from the years post-military, you know, he was in the military, and a lot of these military people then come into the first responder world because it's similar. They have the family aspect. They have, you know, the go-getter. There's all of these characteristics of a person mm-hmm. that once they get out of the military, they feel like they have lost and they find it again in mm-hmm. being a first responder.
Yeah.
And
the things they see and then people expect them to go back to normal life.
Yes. Yeah.
Right
and,
away.
You know, and I remember hearing some of the things that he was like, nobody's known this. I'm like, you need therapy. Like, you need these things, you know, like you telling me these things like is not something that you just can bottle up and not say anything about, because that's what's starting. It literally starts to like infest you inside. Like trauma literally starts eating you from the inside out.
I think that's what was happening to my ex. Because he didn't talk about it. Mm-hmm. So that you are absolutely right. And if you do not talk about it, if you're in the military, if you're police, whatever it is, whatever job you have mm-hmm. that you're unhappy with, if you are festering stuff inside, you're just hurting yourself. You're making yourself ill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, you know, for the first responders, because they're like, well, I don't want to tell my spouse about the, you know, pediatric call, or I don't want to, you know, you don't want to give that secondary trauma to them. But I think there is a proper way of just being able to say, hey, like that was a really hard shift. And, you know, I need some time alone, mm-hmm. and recognizing it and saying like, you don't have to give the details of the call, but you can talk about how it made you feel. And yeah. that's really hard for first responders and men to do.
Well, I was about to say, so a lot of times men feel weak mm-hmm. telling another man, mm-hmm. you know, oh, that affected me.
Yeah.
Like they're like, oh no, I'm fine. Let's go back to our bunk. Or,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I interviewed Michael Sergi, and he actually wrote a book, Relentless Courage. And he talks about, you know, being in the military, then going to being in police and, you know, having a fatal shooting. And he wrote that, you know, he wrote saying that like nobody else in the leadership talked about it. They say, oh man, you're going to be a wimp, or, you know, we don't talk about these things. And so they never saw the leaders mm-hmm. actually talking about these calls or how it was affecting. And so he just thought he was the young buck, you know, yeah. kind of saying like, oh my gosh, like this is kind of scary. Like why did this happen, or what's going on, or what are these emotions that I'm feeling? And then you see the leaders not saying anything. So then you don't say anything.
Yeah.
And then it's just a continuous.
Yeah.
And you know, especially interviewing these first responders, you know, and even this, I'm going to say that the sensitive subjects, you know, you with your 5 miscarriages, when people don't talk about it, when people don't bring it up and say, hey, this really affected me, they then feel alone. Mm-hmm. They feel like,
I wear it around my neck. I have my 5 angels mm-hmm. right here.
Yeah. And it's, you know, you, especially even with your podcast, being able to share that, because I don't know what that is like. And I can imagine how like heartbreaking that is.
Yeah.
And to not know somebody, you know, that maybe your husband can't relate to it, but having a support system of the people that do know what that feels like.
Yeah.
And being in all phases, you know, maybe somebody's 10 years and it still affects them.
Yeah.
Maybe somebody's just a year out of it, or maybe it just happened last week.
Yeah. And I have a lot of writers that write in like, hey, it was 2 years ago and I'm still not ready to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And sometimes I'd want to like email that to my ex and like, see, like it's not what it does to your body. Like your hormones are don't just
right
stop, mm-hmm. you know, your body still thinks you're pregnant and you know, it takes a while. And so having my hormones and then his job and, you know, that clash was just, a bad mix.
Yeah. And you know, I would say as well, like your resiliency to 5 miscarriages is, I mean, you're a tough lady. I mean, I know,
thank you.
I know people that, you know, have had one and don't try again.
Yeah. And I think that's why I have 5 nieces and nephews, and they, it's gonna make me want to cry, but they are my absolute world. Mm-hmm. I feel like they're my children. Like I would die for them. Like my brothers are my best friends. My dad's my best friend. My stepmom is, she's actually a first responder as well. She was a cardiac nurse, and I have such a wonderful family, but my 5 nieces and nephews are the coolest, most amazing humans in the world. And I thank God. I always wanted to be a mom. And that I'm 39 years old now, mm-hmm. and that's probably not going to be in my cards, and I have to be okay with that. Yep. Right. But I can still be the fucking best aunt. I don't know if you can guess on
you
here.
You can. Yep.
And I know I moved to Boise and I'm away from them, but I try to FaceTime and be there for them as much as I could. But I knew through my miscarriages and my divorce and, you know, my struggle with like my Xanax and like using that to make me feel better and all that. I just needed to start fresh. I needed to go away. I needed to be somewhere different. And I luckily have 2 of my best friends that I grew up with. I mean, there's God right there. Like, two of my best friends, first best friends that I've ever had, moved here and are like my biggest supporters. And I took the risk and grabbed my dog, got in my car, and said goodbye to my family and my nieces and nephews, and drove away. And I'm alone. And I don't say I'm lonely. I call it solitude. You know, I'm starting fresh. I'm not in trying to date and, you know, go out there. And I do have to make money. So I started my own, because I've been doing marketing for 20 years. I started my own freelance company called Copper and Oak Creative. So it's just copperandoakcreative.com. And I do everything in the marketing world, from graphic design, web design, you name it, webs, everything. I've done it for so long that I can do it all. So, I'm still looking for a job, a corporate job, because I think that'll do well, but I've already gotten jobs and I have a California license plate. People are like, if you drive around with your California license plate, you're going to get flipped off. I'm like, I got to change that thing right away.
Change that before you do yeah. your license. Yeah.
But actually, I think having like bike racks and my surf racks and then my cute dog's head sticking out of the window, people don't even, you know,
and to that, like, I'm from Idaho. Like, I grew up here. This is my land. And I get so frustrated with people when they're like, oh, fuck the Californians. And like, we're all maxed out, like, go yeah. back. And it's like, they're like-minded people, first of all, that are coming here. Second of all, like, we have people restarting fresh.
Yeah.
Like, you have the choice to live here or not. Really, you do, you know? Yeah. And do not put that negativity on people because that's where they're from.
Yeah.
Like, that to me is just as bad as being like, oh, you're black, you're not allowed here. No. Like, no. You are. Yeah. You have a choice in life and you get to live your life exactly how you need to. So all of you Idaho people, like, knock your shit off. Like, actually be yeah. nice to them, because you never know. I mean, this is a great example. You never know why they're moving here. And especially me being in real estate and like having an understanding of people is like, you never fucking know yeah. what their backstory is.
Well, it was funny because I just went to the Standing Wave because I live close to that. And there was a guy going out, and I've been surfing my whole entire life. I was sponsored, but I wasn't surfing like professionally. Wow. I gave some guy some advice, and he went out and did it, and he came back, and he's from Boise, whatever. Oh, and he's cool. Like, oh, where in Boise are you? And I'm like, I'm from California.
Yeah.
And he's like, what? He's like, I hate California people come here. And then, you know, he struck a conversation and he was so thankful. And, you know, and I think people from anywhere right. should be able to go anywhere.
Yeah.
And I read something, I think it was like a Brené Brown one, where she says like people live the longest that actually live in different places yeah. and meet different people and have different experiences and put themselves in different experiences.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, really at the end of the day, you know, our life is really just like an experiment. It's like, yeah. you know, I have that phrase of why not, you know, why yeah. not move to Boise? Like, why not start a podcast? Like, it's that growth mindset where people are like, but I've never done it before. And it's like, well, no fucking shit. Like, that's why you're trying it. That's why you're learning it. Like, mm-hmm. I think people think that like, oh, you turn 18 and you're supposed to know all of the things to do in the world and that's the end of it. Yeah. It's like, no, every single day, if you have that open mindset and being able to learn from other people, you can see what they have lived through.
Yeah.
And take those little nuggets and little gems that they talk about and relate it back to your life, but also be like, whoa, I never thought of it like that.
Yeah. I actually wrote down a quote that I heard this morning. You will never feel ready to do the things that scare you. You will never feel ready to take that leap. Your brain is designed to protect you, mm-hmm. which is so true. And change requires risk. And if you want to change your life, you must make the decision to change. Mm. And most people don't make that decision.
Yeah.
You know, they stay in their comfort zone because that your brain is designed to protect you. They, I grew up here. Mm-hmm. So this is where I am, you know, this is where my family is. So I'm going to stay here. Right. You can visit your family. Mm-hmm. And that's what I kept telling myself is like, my family is an hour and a half away. Right.
Yeah.
I can be there in an hour and a half if I need to, but this is my life and I have one life and I'm in Boise.
Yeah. Welcome. I'm so excited for you. And I'm so excited for, I'm like a ball. I wasn't expecting to have this hit so true to me as well.
Yeah.
You know, and I think even just having these conversations with you is I reflect then on my life, you know, of any of these guests that come on and I'm like, oh, well, how did I think about that? Or how did it affect me? Or how did I connect with them? And there's so many similarities between you and I of, you know, our parents being in the first responder realm, being the youngest, like that comes with its own, you know, kind of challenges of birth order. And then you talk about, you know, being in those, in that relationship of emotional abuse and what that looks like and making that choice of saying like, hey, I know I haven't ever been here, but I know I need to take this risk because there will be reward.
Yeah. Starting a podcast.
Exactly. Starting a podcast.
Saying, you know? Fuck it. Let's do it.
Exactly. It really is, you know, and people ask me all the time or say to me all the time, they're like, oh my gosh, you're so interesting. I'm like, you can be too. You really could. Like, there's nothing that you can't do. There really is nothing that you can't do. You can learn it. You can put yourself in the rooms with the people. You can... having that vulnerability of saying like, hey, I don't know this, but I want to learn it. Mm-hmm. Like learning is not like something that you just are like, yep, I know everything and I'm done and I'm good. And like, let's move on.
Yeah.
No, learning is being okay with that change. Saying that, hey, I've been in this career for 30 years, but I could have another career for another 15 years.
And that's what I've been telling myself. You know, I've been in marketing for 20 years and I'm like, okay, I'm here in Boise, right? I've applied to a bunch of different places. Yes, I'm doing some freelance stuff here and there, which I'm so blessed that people are, you know, calling me and emailing me about it. But I'm like, maybe there's something else that I'm supposed to do out here. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. Yeah. And I'm open.
Yeah.
I'm so open for it. And, so God, thank you.
Yeah. It was a little therapy session today. Oh, okay. As we wrap up, I know we talked about so many different things today.
Yeah.
So many, I'm going to say like home runs today of just topics. Is there anything else that you want to share with the guests while you're on?
Let's see. One thing we didn't go over. I play music. I just had a new single that just came out. You can go to Summer Grace Watson, on iTunes and check out my new music. I'm kind of, instead of albums right now, I'm doing singles just kind of as it comes, I'll put it out.
Perfect.
So I do all the songwriting and singing. And then I have a, engineer who's a really close friend that's in San Clemente, California. And we've been kind of working remote. So that just came out. It's called Whiskey in a Wine Glass. So that's actually like the countryest song I've ever done. And then I have another CD, or actually two other CDs. One is actually under just Summer Watson, but I realized there's a British opera singer with my same name.
Okay.
And so when I was telling people, oh, look up Summer Watson, they'd be like, oh, you sing opera. I was like, no, I don't. So I added my middle name in there. So if you look up Summer Grace Watson on Spotify, Amazon, iTunes, any of that, you can hear my music. That's been extremely therapeutic for me.
Yeah.
And that's kind of been my outlet. And I thank my dad and my family for that, because I grew up in a very musical family. And then my miscarriage podcast, just email survivingmiscarriage.com and hit me up and we'll talk. Yeah. And then if you need any marketing help, whether it be, I mean, I'm doing photography, videography, wow. I do editing, I do all of that. If you need help with podcasting, podcast marketing, marketing in general, digital marketing, my website is copperandoatcreative.com.
Awesome. Awesome.
That's it.
And listeners, I will have all of her contact information in the show notes. If you felt moved or something that you heard today, I encourage you to reach out to me. You can get me on my website. You can get me on Instagram. My all of my contact information is in the show notes as well. So please, if you are feeling moved by these, I really want to hear about them. And if you're willing to come on and share your story, I am open for it. So I am starting to do a lot more virtuals. If you're not in the Boise area, that's okay. We will get you on to the podcast. So thank you again. I just want to say, like, I love every single person on here, and I just love you coming on here and being able to have this conversation. So thank you guys once again, and I will talk to you later. Bye. Thank you again for listening to another episode of Raw Thoughts Podcast. I'd appreciate it if you could follow, like, subscribe, and share with anybody that you think would be interested in this. You could also head over to my website at rawthoughtspodcast.com and see any other guests that have been on the episodes. You could also go over to Instagram and follow at rawthoughts.podcast. I would really appreciate it, and always send me a message if you're interested in being a guest or any feedback.